Hello, everybody. Scott Johnson here from the Chord Podcast. Bo and John are not here with me at this very moment, but we did meet up and hang out with each other while at BlizzCon 2017 in Anaheim, California. I just got back, like, moments ago. Bo's on a plane, arrived sometime, I don't know, in the next couple of days back in Ottawa, Canada, where he comes from. Takes forever for him to get there. John will be back in Arizona soon. We will have a normal show on Wednesday. However, during the con, John and I in particular, long story why Bo wasn't there. We'll tell that tale next Wednesday. We were able to sit down with a fantastic guest, and all of that will be made clear here shortly. What we got to talk about with the dev, his name is Claudio. We talked about the new heroes coming to the game, what that may mean for the meta, changes they're making to laning, the performance-based matchmaking system, which has got everybody very excited. It was probably the biggest announcement. Cool stuff happening with cinematics and so on. So check out this interview. Again, we'll have a proper show, and my voice should be normal again by Wednesday as well. We'll have a normal show on Wednesday. If you'd like to catch that live, we do it every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Mountain Time. That's 6 p.m. Pacific at frogpants.tv. It's a great time. You can participate, be in the chat room. We take your questions sometimes in there and that kind of stuff. So come join us there. And if you can't, it's always on the podcast right after. So expect that as well. That's this Wednesday, 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Mountain Time. That's my time zone right here for the Core Podcast. All right. Without any further ado, I give to you our interview with Claudio. It was fantastic. Enjoy. Well, Claudio, we appreciate you letting us do this. I guess we can just get started.
Yeah.
So, we really like this year's announcement so far.
Good.
And in particular, our current Blizzard obsession is Heroes of the Storm, and very happy with those announcements. But in particular, it was a lot of the sort of 2018 preview stuff that we just got a glimpse of. And we thought maybe we'd ask a couple questions about some of that, if that's okay.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Awesome. So, I'll start. I had a question about the performance-based matching.
Sure.
Versus what it is now.
Okay.
I guess what was the thinking there? What was the impetus for needing to go that direction, and where do you hope that direction takes the game and the team and the players?
Yeah, so I mean, we have communities just growing, and we hear more and more things on the forums and Reddit. We know matchmaking is a very big concern. And so we sent off some of our engineers, server engineers, to take a look at kind of how everything worked right now. Everything's very, it's kind of ELO based. It's very win-loss, like, hey, and there's a little bit of like personal rank adjustment in there. If you maybe go on a decent win streak and sees you're winning. So Travis and Dabiri and a bunch of the server guys, they started meeting and talking about ways we can improve that. I know Overwatch offers something similar to this. Ours is different than theirs. And we run a ton of simulations on stuff because we have so much data, and we can actually model it against what we want to do versus what we're doing now, and we can see the differences those things do. The deep dive panel today, or the what's next panel, actually the one at 5 after this, Travis goes into a ton of information about it, just to briefly talk about some of it. Just the speed at which we can place you into the right spot, like where you're expected to be, is like halved. It's like twice as fast. So he uses the example of like, here's a Grandmaster Smurf who tanks to bronze and then makes the climb up. And it shows like how long it takes them in a general like system we have now. I think it's like 250 games or something.
Yeah.
And under the new system, it's like 142 games or something.
Oh my gosh.
So like it's significantly faster.
Seems significant for diamond players like me. Or not silver, sorry. Did I say diamond?
I'm not diamond. Yeah. I'm
holy
diamond
crap.
Either. It's okay. Everyone's diamond here.
I was recently bronze.
You're a diamond.
Went straight to diamond.
Diamond.
Sorry. But like silver, gold, these guys seem like they'll benefit from this because it's not so much that it's not that every match you get is bad or something, but there are games where I feel like I performed better than I am being told I did.
Yeah.
And it seems like this is going to tell me that, or at least going to put me in a place where I'm heading in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, Heroes is such a team-based game, right? So you're heavily relying on how everyone else is doing, the decisions they're making versus what you want to do or what you're trying to get them to do. Hopefully voice chat kind of gets people doing the similar things. But with the matchmaking, we actually look at, like, say you're playing Kerrigan, and it's like, okay, what are other Kerrigan players doing? And I think that this does this around like your current skill rating, it assesses like and says like, oh, she has this much CC time with her spikes, or she has this much damage dealt, or she has this much CC damage. So like each character, it's not just one sweeping thing. Like, how much damage did you do? And it's like, I don't know, I'm Lucio. Like, I didn't do as much as, you know, Greymane did. Okay, so it's actually taking like specific heroes from my understanding, and it makes a model based off like some key metrics for what's expected of that, and it says like, oh, you performed like really nicely, or you were underperforming, and so that way, like, you take a loss, like, you're gonna lose points, right? Like, sure. your elo is gonna lose points, but it's gonna say you're not losing as many though because you were performing extremely well for the hero you were playing.
Oh, interesting. Okay,
that's very cool. So one of the things that we run into, and Bo, the other person on our show, has been talking about a lot lately, is sometimes having a frustration with the PvE Asmodan, the guy who doesn't know it's a multiplayer game and is just gonna push the bottom lane. I think I have kind of two questions on this, especially with a lot of the revisions that are coming. One, frequently you see that Asmodan kind of get that positive reinforcement because he got MVP because he stayed in the lane and he got a lot of XP and he did a lot of siege damage and he made the numbers look really good, but wasn't really playing to the team and all of that. Is this something that the system's going to take into account? And also, along with that, also with the tower changes and the ammunition changes and all of that, is that something that you see combating that style of play, or at least having an impact on it in some way?
Yeah, I mean, we like split pushers a little bit in the game. We don't like to see a ton of it. Like, it's not our favorite thing. You saw some nerfs recently, like Nidus Canal for Zagara and for Asmodan's Trait, and those are doing some pretty nice things for kind of curbing that play style a little bit. It's not that we don't want it in the game. It's just that we don't maybe want it as much as we have now. I can't really speak to whether the performance-based matchmaking will really help that, because if excelling Asmodans are split pushing lanes and being successful with it, and you're like, he has 150k siege damage but I only did 70, it's like, okay, well, if that's a key metric that we use to see if you're performing well, then it's like, okay, well, you're not performing as well as other Asmodans are. So I don't know that this system will really deter that. I think that's more done through balance, and we're definitely aware of those. We play quick match, unranked, we do all these things all the time. We're playing constantly on my team. Like, the whole team is super engaged with the game, so we get an earful and we see it ourselves, and we don't necessarily enjoy it either. So we're taking steps to try it.
It's interesting to see something like the tower change and the lane changes at this stage. Whenever those kinds of changes happen with the game, it's always curious to me, because I always think, well, what, why now and not before? Like, what made it? When I remember back when mount speed was reduced, and I thought, this seems like a really good idea, but why now? What is it? Just a little bit of background on why is it now that we're getting those tower changes? Some are being removed altogether. Ammunition is eternal now. Why now as opposed to pre-2.0 or post-2.0 or whatever? Just priorities?
Education. No, it's just it's not necessarily a difficult change to make. It's just how much can you learn in 2 years? You can learn a lot, actually, it turns out. So, I mean, towers are... We did the ammunition system very early on. We were super excited about it. Now, after playing for 2 years, hearing the community's complaints, not necessarily about ammunition, but like you have to put all the pieces together, right, as a development team, and we can hear those things and see specific ways we can try and make laning more interesting, make it more important. So yeah, it does those specific changes. To answer your other question, I didn't really hit on, was that infinite ammunition does a great job at curbing Asmodans, just sending demons at your stuff. So he's gonna make progress on you if you can't take care of him, but it's not gonna be nearly the same. We run figures on this internally too, to see like how much slower like a Zagara can push a lane internally versus on live. And overall, we're not expecting. We've made other changes that keep the game moving as we expected. So hopefully, it doesn't actually slow the game down. If it does, we can always make changes. But again, we just learned so much in 2 years, and we're not afraid to make changes, especially big changes like this. And it's important we do it at the right time. So HGC will have just ended for a while. We're restarting to a new season, and so it's kind of the perfect time to start making those. And 2.0 didn't really come out with a lot of those changes. It was mostly around progression and trying to create that engagement that way. But this is now our moment to just kind of do a big in-game push.
It's interesting because it seems like overall roster and the new characters that come into the mix, they obviously affect what happens in the game in many ways. And I I always find it interesting to see when these happen. It also affects, obviously, the specific map you're playing, and then the character you're playing is affected in a very special way. Asmodan, in his case, his minions are going to take a beating. But in other cases, characters aren't going to be too bothered by the change because they're just taking down towers. Was the decision to take the ancillary towers out a way of just... what's the word I'm looking for? It wasn't, you didn't want to tear everything out and change it all. It's like, well, okay, we're making it harder for you to get to these towers or get them down. So in trade, we'll take out these other ones that seemed like they were kind of weren't... They were just sort of there to annoy, not annoy, but, you know, we had you'd take them down, but it was not that big a deal.
Yeah, I mean, believe it or not, these decisions actually had almost nothing to do with each other. We started, when we started on Volskaya Industry, the map itself was, it takes like 9 months or something to make. Like, we started making this map like a long time ago, and we had built it kind of from the ground up. John DeShazer is the lead battleground designer, and he knew right away like that he wanted us to start to yoink those back towers out. So we seeded it on that map first. We can see how players respond to it, if they even notice it. And honestly, like, he kind of snuck this into a test with us once where, like, they were just gone to tell one, I think, and no one said anything. It's like, you just don't really even know. And so that kind of speaks a little bit to it. Some of the more important things that those towers do is help, like, your Abathurs and your Murkies, so it kind of protects the flank. But now, with each of those, keeps providing true sight. They'll shoot at Novas that are trying to flank, or Zeratuls or something that are coming in.
Ooh, I'm glad you brought those two up. Yeah. The stealth changes.
Stealth changes, yeah.
So, I don't even know how to ask this. I mean, we have long been, you know, frustrated in certain... We get, like, a three-man group to go play Quick Match or something, and the other team's got Nova and Zeratul.
Yeah.
Or maybe Sammy
Valera
or something. Somebody,
yeah.
And it's fun from their perspective. Not as fun from our perspective. If you're a coordinated team, there's a difference, right?
But, yeah, very much.
But when you got a couple of strangers with you don't know and stuff, maybe voice chat's gonna help that. But these changes, what was, again, the motivation there? What were you guys thinking about making that?
Stealth has been in an interesting spot for us for a while. I mean, we basically just straight adopted the StarCraft shader, brought it over into Heroes. Didn't really think twice about it. Zeratul was like one of the first characters we made. Yeah. And just over time, we've seen the frustration that they can cause. And then we also look at it from the game design perspective and seeing things in esports. And very rarely, if ever, like, you see Zeratul, of course, Void Prison is Void Prison, but you don't really get a lot of action from the other heroes, and when you do, it's kind of a troll pick or a long shot or whatever you want to call it. So most of that we determined was just from the eye test. Like, pros are really good at seeing the shimmer. Me, even in Quick Match, and people are worse than me and people are better than me, like, they have trouble seeing the shimmer too. Or we have unrevealable on Valir and you just can't see it anyway.
Yeah.
And so by making the shimmer easier to see, we kind of level the playing field between those heroes, and it also allows us to make changes to the stealthies to buff them up so that maybe now some of them will start to be seeing hopefully more action than HCC and even upper, like, level hero league.
Yeah. We were talking about how there seems to be a cool trade-off there between so maybe they lose a little stealth because they're more visible, but what they gain is while they're stealth, they're a little more powerful.
Yeah.
They get revealed, they lose those abilities,
yeah,
or they lose that advantage. I think it feels like a really good way to handle that, and so I'm excited to get hands-on with the stealth characters.
It does. I am curious, do you feel that there's a advantage still to the stealth element? Because, I mean, obviously in the case of Valera, stealth gives her different abilities, mm-hmm, but in the case of like a Nova or Zeratul specifically, now that they're easier to see, does it feel like, what keeps the stealth from feeling superfluous for being a part of their kit?
Yeah, it is a really fine balance. It almost alleviates your knowledge of the situation on the battleground when you're a stealthy, like, let's just say,
right,
I'm playing Nova, like, can you see me? Like,
yeah,
do I have the element of surprise here? I'm not actually sure. And so we can just kind of make the assumption that everyone knows where stealthies are now because the shimmer is now easier to see. Hopefully that's the case. With that assumption, we can give Nova more tools, right? So we give her a tool that she can instantly recloak herself. So maybe she can take a couple pop shots and do snipe. I think we've given her Snipe Master, some of Snipe Master baseline now too. And so, like those are very powerful talents that people gravitated towards when they would play Nova. And now we can just kind of roll those into her kit in general because she loses a little bit of the power that Stealth provided, and then again instantly recloak, and we can keep, we'll keep making changes or fudging numbers however we need to if it's not quite, if it's not doing quite what we want
to make her a more well-rounded character all around rather than just a gimmick of like, well, she's the one that you maybe can't see. So we run into that with Dan all the time. Dan thinks if he's Stealth, nobody can see him.
And then when someone sees you, you're like, damn, like, this is, I'm in a predicament. But now we just kind of assume that everyone knows where everyone's at when you're stealthy. But now you have a lot more tools. Valyria has like a gap closer, which she has like 4 or 5 grid like gap closer that gets her on you faster. So it's like you can't give her that if she has like a very difficult to see stealth, and then that happens too. So
I assume as a team, you guys sometimes there's got to be days where you're like, you know what, guys, just throw stealth out and like let's be done with stealth forever. But I know it's not the Blizzard way. You there's something there. Stealth is a cool thing, just like anything else is a cool thing, and you don't want to just baby and bathwater that thing out. So I totally get why, but is that, of all of the controversial mechanics or things injected into the game, whether it's every map is different, therefore balance is different or whatever, of all of those kinds of things, where does stealth rank and the level of, man, we should just shoot it in the head and...
Yeah, it's not, it's honestly not a huge concern with team. It's more of like a sadness or like, you know, like stealth is such a burden on people who can't see this shader. Stealth is not a burden at all in HGC, and therefore we never see those heroes involved in the pro scene, even though some of them are actually pretty good and we'd love to see them in there. So it's not, I mean, there are other things that are a lot more challenging. Just the number of bugs that Void Prison causes alone, like, makes my job infinitely harder. But stealth itself is, you can't do those heroes without hitting that fantasy note. Like, how do you have a Zeratul deck that can't, how Dark Templar Zeratul? Yeah, you can't stealth, though. Oh. Don't worry about it.
I think it's really, stealth.
Yeah, Rogue that can't stealth. Like, you know, a Ghost Nova that can't stealth. You can't really do it. So.
Sure. Well, these two new characters that we've got coming, Hanzo and Alex Straza, everyone's very excited about those. Crowd really reacted. Hanzo being an assassin and a support role being given to a dragon lady, which is really interesting. Do you see them fulfilling any specific roster needs in the game? Are we so far past that now where it's like, well, no, they're just cool kits and here they go and we love these characters and it's great? Or are we still in that phase where it's like, well, we need some good counter to this particular gameplay or whatever? And do they provide any of that?
I mean, Alex Straza, she's a big dragon, which says like, bruisery, you know, whatever. But she, I mean, she's the life bringer, right? So we immediately knew that we were going to make her a support, and we immediately knew we wanted to make her a BlizzCon hero. Like, the amount of time that it took to make her is insane. Like, we, to put it in perspective, we started Alex Straza's model 2 weeks after last BlizzCon.
Oh my gosh.
So to make that model, and then because she's a two model, which Greymane's a two model too, but the dragon being as big as it is, having to solve the issues with scale, we also have instant turning in our game, and so how do you make a dragon with instant turning not look completely doink? Like, there's a lot of tech that's actually built around those systems, and to stand it up takes quite a bit of time. So we started building her a long time ago, and we wanted to make 2017 the year of the supports, and so I think we've delivered on that with our 4th support hero out of 15, which is a lot, 14 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And we did some reworks on other support heroes, but she really feels a role. It's super cool. Like, she uses her own health to heal another hero, and then she has a pretty big, very telegraphed AoE heal, and it's really cool seeing the counterplay of people knocking people out of there. Just dropping all your AoE in there, so there's like a, you know, a neutral or maybe even a net loss on health gain, and then just how cool is it being a giant dragon?
Well, in the year of support, does it ever feel bad to anybody that Stukov is the greatest hero made ever, and that's all we'll ever need again?
It's super surprising. I'm not gonna lie. Nathan Lamiger is the designer on him. He really surprised every one of us. Like, his heroics are super fun. Like, massive shove. Like, when he first pitched it, it was called Big Arm Mega Shove. And we usually have really great names like that, and then the writers go, no, it's not gonna happen, and they'll give us a different name, and we'll have to pick from a list of names and name him. But Stukov's great. Alex Straza, if you haven't had had a chance to play her yet.
Not yet. Gonna
I mean,
play
you,
later.
You gotta try her. She's.
I love support anyway, so I'm stoked about
it. I got to do a solo 1v5 base defense in dragon form on the demo, and it felt real good.
Did it feel good?
It felt real
okay.
good.
Okay. Right.
There's a dragon build in there too. There's like a quest talent or a talent at level 1 that reduces the cooldown on your dragon queen, which is your trait that turns you into a dragon. For every hero you hit with your flame buffet, which is your E, and then there's like a 20 that when you basic attack, it applies your flame buffet. And so like there's a dragon build in there, and we think it's super fun. So
yeah, I was surprised at how often it came up, because I mean, you think, okay, well, they gotta be, you can't have a screen taking up dragon through the entire game. There has to be some balance. And I thought, oh, there it is with the cooldown. But then as I played her, I was constantly surprised by how often I actually got to do it. And it felt really, really solid. I liked your kit. With Hanzo, what about with him? I noticed he's got one of the slowest auto attacks in the world, but the ability to just instantly clear minions with that talent
felt very, very
strong. What role do you kind of see him falling into?
I mean, he's a great like poke range assassin, right? And he provides scouting for your team too, which is highly desired across multiple levels of play, especially in pro play and like upper level hero league. Scouting is great, but yeah, that talent's super cool. We don't necessarily hand every assassin some sort of mobility, but being an Overwatch here, we run in. It's got to have some mobility.
Yeah.
Can't really climb walls in our game. Like, so what? How do we adapt that? And so there's no verticality, really. And with that, we're able to give him natural agility, which is sort of like Genji, but it has to involve either structures or terrain. And so, and he's a geometry assassin, right?
Yeah.
Like, to actually have, I don't know if you've not played him yet, we actually project, like, you'll see the lines of the terrain in the game, which alone is, again, another engineering and artistic feat to like add that feature.
Sure.
But to be able to use scatter arrow and understand like what the expected result is, like it's like a necessary
feature. Have it be real physics ricochet and that kind of thing.
And so we're actually adding that for Junkrat too, so he can understand his art. And I think we're adding it for Lucio too, so you can
see. That's very, very cool.
So in Junkrat, I was actually going to mention on Junkrat's case, he does feel like a culmination of the tech and the art and the characterization all coming together. This seems like a small thing, but his exploding balls, his grenades, are amazing. They look better than they do in Overwatch.
I'm glad you say that, because that probably single-handedly killed like 7 people on our team. We've never come as close as we did to not shipping a hero on time as we did with Junkrat.
Wow, really?
He was literally to the wire. Like, it took so much engineering and artistic effort to actually get those bounces. Well, I think we estimated it like 2 weeks of work.
Yeah.
And it took us like 7.
Yeah,
and it was just a
he feels it's complicated, but it's totally working. And
it feels
he's
fantastic.
A blast. He's got you somehow capture the chaos of Junkrat. He is a chaos lord, after all.
Chaos.
But also the strategies are there, and it's I was honestly a little bit shocked. Like some of the other Overwatch characters, they just so easily come over. I felt like Tracer was an easy move, and not easy, but you know what I mean. Yep. Like it fit really
well. Really challenging.
I'll bet.
The fact that they seem easy means that we did good by them. Because
it's very
translating
impressive.
Overwatch star game is not necessarily easy.
Whereas you know traditional, I've got a sword or I've got an arrow or whatever. I mean those feel like I expect to see those. Mm-hmm. But having Junkrat come over and have things solved, like, well, we can't have him constantly throwing balls, so how do we do auto attacks? And that, I think, is a really elegant way to do that. The way his mines work, giving cooldown to the trap having to sort of set itself, having him not be destroyable. Like, it's still Junkrat, but
very
there's all these new
decisions.
Ways to play him. Yeah,
yeah
I love that.
We had a lot of the debate around those abilities and, not being able to target him and... he actually didn't even have a basic attack for the longest time.
Really? Nothing
at
all?
Yeah, he just had grenades.
He had to wait and just do grenades all the time. Okay.
But
I still wish I did more structure damage, but that's okay. You can take that back to the team. See what they say.
Is there anything you can tell us about? I know they kind of very lightly talked about it, and maybe it's going to be in this panel, but they said there's going to be a lot more touch-ups and tuning to the battlegrounds themselves. What are some of the plans there and what you're hoping to accomplish with those?
So updating mercenaries was a really big part of this. We basically just looked at all the mercenaries and can we make them more interesting, right? Is there something we can do? So, for example, with knights, like... Knights are so fire and forget. It's like take them at the right time, let them push a lane while everybody else goes somewhere else. So it's like, well, infinite ammo, kind of dumps on that a little bit, so they become less interesting just because of another decision we made. And so we decided to give the little mage guy in the night group an aura of, I think it's spell power, or spell armor. So now it encourages you to stay within that aura, and you take significantly less damage from all abilities while you're in there.
Oh, so it applies to the heroes as well?
Yeah, I thought it was just to help minions.
Oh, no, get inside that and try and stop a team that's seriously sieging.
Oh, I love that. A little moving buff, and that's great.
Take that, Chromie.
Heads up, you just got a couple minutes left.
All right, cool. I think we really have just one more question that's just like elephant in the room question. And I hate elephants that are in rooms, so we're going to kick this elephant out.
Like
Hanamura, where are we at? Is it coming back? Are we one day going to see it again and return?
Oh, yeah. We put way too much work in that battleground, and we took a lot of risks with it. A lot of just bold decisions by the battleground team. We were pretty happy with some, weren't happy with others, obviously. Got community feedback on it. Decided it'd be better if we just took it out for now. We're working on it. We don't have an ETA, but that is way too beautiful of a battleground and took way too much time to just go, we're not going to do it. So hopefully we can get it back in soon, bigger and better than ever.
And the final shot of the, not cinematic, but the short, well, the cinematic, at the end there's kind of a big vista of a map thing and some portal-y looking stuff, and I saw some stuff.
There's a golden city. Are you going to say anything about the Golden City?
I think that was just Sky Temple.
Sky Temple?
Yeah, so there's actually a mural like downstairs in the main thing when you come down the escalator for the Heroes area. And it shows through each of those hexagons all of the kind of key points that we've shown in the Nexus
so far. Gotcha, okay.
And so we're definitely building and growing the story.
I saw Battle Cruiser.
Nexus as a place,
okay.
I've always wondered about this.
we've always wondered too, and we're starting to put a lot more oomph on it. So
I love that.
Look forward to the future.
Well, we could not be more grateful for the time. Thank you so much. Yeah, you guys as well. And can't wait to keep playing Heroes. It's just our favorite game right now.
Check it out. Thanks for everything you do for the community.
You bet. Really appreciate it.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.